WIOL's Illinois Newsroom, this is 217 Today. I'm Brian Moline. It's Thursday, December 1st. Coming up, more than $50 billion from opioid settlements is starting to flow to state and local governments. All that money is forcing officials to reckon with long-held beliefs about addiction. That story in just a few minutes. But first, these headlines. Today is the last day of the so-called veto session, and Illinois lawmakers are expected to consider changes to the controversial law that's set to eliminate cash bail next year. Shannon Heffernan reports.
Starting next year, the state can't require people to pay money in order to leave jail while they await trial. Instead, a decision about who is kept in jail will be based on the person's charges and any risk they may flee or threaten public safety. Opponents have said the new law will endanger communities because fewer people will be kept behind bars while they await their day in court. Those opponents have hoped for big changes to the law before it goes into effect January 1. But the current legislation, likely being considered by lawmakers today, makes only minor changes and largely keeps the reforms intact. Supporters say the reforms will make communities more safe because it forces courts to focus on the more serious crimes. I'm Shannon Heffernan.
Governor J.B. Pritzker has dedicated a new Springfield memorial to highlight former President Barack Obama's rise to power. A new state historical marker has been erected outside the old state capitol, the site Obama used in 2007 to launch his first presidential run. Those gathered recalled the frigid February day more than 15 years ago, where Obama stood outside and embarked on his long-shot run for the White House. For Pritzker, the new sign keeps alive Obama's main campaign theme that still carries weight today.
To me, this marker is a reminder that one of our favorite sons brought a message of hope that resonated at a crucial time to people all across the world.
Obama did not attend yesterday's event, but a representative from the Obama Foundation was there to say Springfield continues to hold, quote, an important place in the heart of the former president. University of Illinois professors have published a study diving into the experiences of pregnant women of color during the COVID-19 pandemic. As Illinois Newsroom's Luis Velasquez reports, social distancing policies and lack of access to care increased stress and isolation during pregnancy.
In a study of 41 women of color, the majority experienced a form of mistreatment while being pregnant at a healthcare facility. The women were all aged 19 to 45 and live in the United States. The study participants said COVID-19 safety protocols and the lack of transparency from public health officials risked their health and increased the trauma of giving birth. Mai Huang teaches social work at the U of I and co-wrote the study. She says the root of the problem is systemic racism in our current healthcare system.
A lot of these problems already existed before pandemic, and I think it worsened because of our social distancing policy prevent more barriers to access to care.
Huang says she hopes this study will prompt policy change. For example, she would like to see healthcare facilities offer culturally sensitive treatment services. I am Luis Velasquez, Illinois Newsroom.
Chinese students at the University of Illinois say they're proud of protesters in their home country, where the government is cracking down on public demonstrations against COVID-19 lockdowns. Some of those students held their own rally Tuesday at the university. One student says these protesters know they could be punished for merely holding a symbol of protest, such as a piece of white paper or flowers, or the government might go after their families.
Whatever we do, we would just be arrested. We would be accused. All our family will have a crime or something. So that's smart. That's a really smart movement.
Protests in China took off across the country after 10 people in a western city died by fire. Some sources say the victims were unable to escape because of COVID lockdown restrictions. The Chinese government has disputed those claims. Chinese students we interviewed asked that we not use their names out of fear their comments might spark retaliation from the Chinese government. Still to come, a look at how states will spend billions of dollars coming to them from recent settlements with opioid drug manufacturers. That story from the Trade-Offs podcast is next on 217 Today.
The 21st is where Illinois gathers for news, information, and daily conversation on politics, the pandemic, culture, and everything in between. I'm Brian Mackey, inviting you to join the conversation anytime, day or night, by leaving us a voicemail. The number is 217-300-2121, and we might play it on air. Then tune in Monday through Thursday at 11 a.m. on AM 580 and 6 p.m. on FM 90.9.
This is 217 Today. I'm Brian Moline. Each week, we bring you a look at the latest in health policy news through our national public health reporting partner, Tradeoffs. For this edition, states are starting to receive billions in opioid settlement dollars. How will they spend it? Tradeoffs host Dan Gorenstein brings us this story.
Thousands of state, county, and local governments have won more than $50 billion in settlements from pharmaceutical companies, prescription drug distributors, and pharmacies for their role in the opioid crisis. But now these governments face the daunting task of directing those dollars to stem this public health epidemic that has killed more than 500,000 people. I'm Dan Gorenstein, host of the health policy podcast, Tradeoffs. Producer Alex Olgan joins me to tell us how these dollars are forcing officials to reckon with long-held beliefs and judgments about addiction. So, Alex, first question. Can governments spend this money any way they want?
No, is the short answer. There are limits, but they're pretty modest. There are several settlements, Dan, but let's just focus on the biggest one, a $26 billion deal between 46 states and Johnson & Johnson and three prescription drug distributors, AmerisourceBergen, Cardinal Health, and McKesson. 85% of dollars have to go to programs that help prevent opioid abuse or help those already struggling with addiction.
And Alex, I know it's early days, but how are states and local governments actually spending this cash?
So big picture, it breaks up into two camps. You've got states like Louisiana that have decided to send 20% of their money to sheriff's departments. Then you've got Rhode Island, which is planning to devote a good chunk to treatment and housing supports for people who use opioids, as well as programs that focus on keeping people safe and alive, a philosophy known as harm reduction.
So it sounds like two divergent views, addiction as crime, addiction as illness. Now, we've wrestled with this opioid epidemic for at least 20 years, Alex. Does one approach have more evidence than the other?
Well, treatment and harm reduction approaches certainly do. Dozens of papers show prescribing medications like methadone and buprenorphine along with therapy reduce the likelihood of overdoses. The drug naloxone has reversed an estimated 200,000 overdoses. And giving people clean needles has been shown over the last 30 years to be cost-effective, reduce the chances of getting HIV and hepatitis C, and increase the likelihood that someone will enter treatment.
And what about that other camp, Alex, addressing this as a law enforcement issue?
The U.S. government has pursued the war on drugs for about 40 years, arresting, prosecuting, and imprisoning people. Today, about half of federal inmates are incarcerated on drug charges. But reviews show this approach has not led to lower rates of drug use, arrests, or overdose deaths.
We started this conversation, Alex, by you telling us that there are only modest checks on how this money is spent. I'm guessing that leaves some of the people who study opioid addiction nervous.
Yeah, Dan, it does. 3,000 communities will receive some of this $50 billion over the next 18 years. And people who will decide how to spend the money often are not experts, researchers, or clinicians. Will they look at the evidence? How much will their personal and moral views on drug use dictate these decisions? Those are big questions as checks start getting cut and something to keep an eye on.
Tradeoffs producer Alex Olgan, thank you. To hear more about how state and local officials are spending opioid settlement dollars, check out the full episode wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Dan Gorenstein. This is Tradeoffs.
Find more health news from Tradeoffs and WILL at IllinoisNewsroom.org. And finally, in your forecast, meteorologist Andrew Pritchard says it will be partly cloudy today with a high of 38 degrees. That's it for today. 217 Today is produced by Sydney Wood. Reporting today contributed by Shannon Heffernan, Dave McKinney, Luis Velasquez, Jeremy Lin, and Dan Gorenstein. Music by the Kilbourne Alley Blues Band. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. I'm Brian Moline. 217 Today is a production of Illinois Public Media. Thanks for listening. Stay safe, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow.